business will be Senate Bill 472, the Attorney General has a has another commitment, so we'll take the bill now, Norm, please. 472. No, we're not on teleconference, so.
Okay.
We can push it if you want.
Go ahead. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Norman Gorsuch, and I'm the Attorney General. And I would appreciate your adjusting your schedule to accommodate me as I have to move out of downtown. I have to leave quickly, but basically, I'm here today to urge the favorable action on Senate Bill 432, which is a bill which would extend the protection of the Alaska Securities Act to offers to buy or sell interest in oil, gas, or mining rights on land in the state, regardless of where the offer or sale occurs. And this legislation is essentially designed to plug a loophole in the current Alaska security statutes, which in effect is permitting individuals to engage in fraudulent activity, particularly through boiler rooms, as we call them in the lower 48, hustling alleged interest in state oil and gas leases or interest in federal oil and gas non-competitive leases here in Alaska. And we have here, to give you some further information, representatives of the Division of Banking and Securities. But I would just like to hold up, this is the kind of thing that is being utilized in the lower 48. This is a standard format, and the various companies simply plug in different names. And one reason that prompted the introduction of this bill was that in this particular case, I have a picture of the governor. And the impression is that this is a sort of state-sponsored program. And unfortunately, what we are seeing throughout the lower 48 is many, many people of modest circumstances and means are being sold alleged interests in oil and gas leases, and in many cases squandering or wasting their life savings in essentially a fraudulent activity. Now, we cannot hope to stop it all, but what we are asking you to consider is a bill which would permit the requirement that these kinds of activities be required to be registered under the Alaska Securities Act, which, while not preventing these schemes, absolutely would require disclosure and accurate representations in the materials that would be distributed. We have cases of people here in Alaska that have been engaged in this activity and have sold these kinds of interests. We also are working with the postal inspectors, the FBI, the Federal Securities and Exchange Commission, and other attorneys general in various states, as well as other banking and securities regulatory divisions throughout the lower 48, to try and alert them to this kind of scam. And there have been recent activities, known Florida recently, I think the state auditor or comptroller shut down several of these schemes. And essentially, what this does is it allows us to bring an action in court and gives us the jurisdiction to bring an action in court against these individuals on the grounds that they have not complied with the Securities Act in terms of registration. It gives us a handle because we are finding that the existing gaps in the enforcement at the federal and state levels are allowing this kind of activity to go on unchecked. In many cases here, the misrepresentation, it may be not in the fact that they may actually have a federal non-competitive lease issued to them, or they may actually have obtained a state oil and gas lease, but the fraud occurs in the misrepresentations with respect to the practicability of oil discovery, the production of oil, the locations of the leases, and so forth. And again, all this act would do would be simply require that they register and make accurate representations. And then if people still insist on paying the prices they are requesting and participating in the activity, then at least they're informed consumers. And essentially, we think this is a very solid consumer protection measure, and we certainly urge that you give it your very serious consideration. And I have Mr. Geldof and my staff here to answer further questions. Also, the representative of the Banking and Securities Division, Mr. Carroll, is here to help explain some of the problems that we're having. That's my sort of prepared
question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Any questions?
How is this going to build protect the lives of the consumers?
What this will do with respect to Alaska consumers is that we have had experiences in which Alaskans have purchased these kinds of interests, and therefore Alaskan consumers would be directly protected in that they would benefit from the requirements of registration and disclosure that are in the Alaska Securities Act. In addition,
if it's offered in Alaska or offered to somebody in Alaska, they're already required to offer somebody.
No, this amendment extends this protection to interests in oil, gas, or mining rights. There apparently is a gap in the statutes that we have.
That's what it says here right now. But if the offer to sell or buy originates from Alaska or is directed to someone in Alaska, then it's already covered. All you're doing is taking people, somebody in Arizona wants to sell somebody in California something up here, then you're sending some restrictions.
Yes, there is.
How is it going to help Alaska?
How is it going to help Alaska residents? It's going to help Alaska residents because, in our judgment, there are many, many people across the country who are being killed, some life savings and so forth, and Alaska's reputation and the reputation of this state, we believe, is being threatened and not bringing us into high repute when these individuals are in fact hoodwinked. And in addition to that, it helps us work in a more coordinated fashion with federal authorities and other state authorities to try and get a handle on these rampant schemes which are just sprouting all over the country.
So it doesn't actually affect the Alaska consumers, it doesn't affect the reputation of Alaska among consumers outside or being built by people outside.
It allows us to use it as a jurisdictional nexus, the fact that these leases are either federal or state leases on Alaska land, as an attempt to bring them within our jurisdiction.
These people that you're attempting to bring within our jurisdiction are not defrauding Alaska citizens, and they are not Alaska citizens themselves. Is that correct?
These individuals are the companies or the alleged operations which obtain these leases or obtain interest in these leases and do sell them in the lower 48. That's correct. That's correct.
Would this also enter into some of these fraudulent hack shelters that your auditors that you're basically saying?
I think it was a curiosity question. On that one, I can't answer it directly. I'm not sure. To the extent that they may link up tax shelters with this kind of an opportunity, it could possibly cover it. But we're directing it specifically at what's being done here is people are being sold, sometimes misrepresented divided interests or undivided interests in these leases at excessively fraudulent prices given the location.
I've seen TV specials in some of those kind of fraudulent tax shelters. It looks like this might fit right into that view too.
It may, but I wouldn't want to be held to that. Perhaps the bank and securities folks.
Thank you. Any further questions?
Thank you, Norm.
All right, Carol.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have brought some materials for distribution to the members of the committee.
And buy some stock.
Thank you, for giving the division an opportunity to speak to you about this meeting. I echo, my name is Barry Carroll. I'm with the State Division of Banking and Securities in the Securities Division. I echo the Attorney General's remarks concerning the import of the legislation. What I have furnished you is a list of approximately 42 companies that have come to our attention in the past year and a half. And our best information is that there are probably 10 times that many companies involved in this activity. We were averaging 100 phone calls a week during the part of the year from investors all over the country, many of whom had already put their money into these programs, who were concerned with the viability of their investments. The representations that these people make have a immediate and lasting impact on Alaska's reputation and its interest in raising legitimate investment capital, in producing and encouraging development and exploration on our oil lands, although certainly the Division of Natural Resources could speak more directly to that. What we have here is a situation, as the Attorney General expressed to you, that these lands primarily are being acquired across the counter from BLM. They're not in any competitive sense at all. They're being purchased for $1 an acre and then these blocks of acreage are being sold to people all over the country out of boiler room shops, and they're representing them to them. The major oil companies are interested, they're producing wells close by. They don't tell them that the major oil companies have had the same opportunity to invest in these, to purchase these same acreage for $1 an acre. They were being marketed from anywhere from $100 to $300 an acre. One company that we have filed a suit on that was foolish enough to offer it directly to Alaska residents had raised in a period of a month and a half $18 million. It's a significant problem. It's a nationwide problem. We have been working actively with the FBI, the Federal Trade Commission, the North American State Securities Administrators Association. We've been instrumental in the inception of probably 100 actions around the country to try and stop this category. The passage of this bill will give us some more tools to work with. It will give us a better handle on some of these operators. It's important to our image and to the state's image in general that this legislation receive your favorable consideration. I certainly would be happy to answer any other questions. Certainly the Attorney General has expressed to you his concerns and why this bill was drafted into those.
Do you have any questions? Thank you. Thank you. Is there any further testimony on?
I just have one question, Mr. Chairman.
Senate Bill 432. Thanks, Senator.
Is there any analysis done of the jurisdictional rights of the state of Alaska in this kind of regard? Do we have any problem having our laws with regard to securities apply to a private transaction that may take place between two private citizens in the state of Florida?
I understand your question. This particular transaction that you described, i.e. a one-on-one transaction where we don't have a multiple marketing plan, may well qualify for another exemption under the Securities Act. If I individually own some acreage.
Let's say that I live in Florida and I go to 50 people in Alabama. Now, do you have any authority for the proposition that the laws of the state of Alaska apply to that transaction?
I think that the Attorney General has considered that in drafting the legislation.
Well, I understand that, but I do have authority for it.
Why don't we ask the attorney who was sitting here?
I'm sorry, I thought he wasn't. No, he's not. I'm sorry, I apologize, Mr. Chairman.
To answer that, though, I do believe that there's a framework reference to that under our Uniform Land Sale Act and others where that there is a compelling state interest that there might be a due process or a constitutional question that we do have the authority to protect our interests, our land, the leases, and leasehold properties located in the state. And I believe there is a basis for that.
Thank you.
Forward to Representative
Thanks, Larry. Joe, do you have
There's no question this is an exertion.
We didn't.
Yes, I'm Joe Galcoff, the property law. There's no question this is exerting jurisdiction to the maximum extent allowed under the federal and state constitution. Process for those, but the folks that did the analysis believe this is in accord with the case law.
I like that analysis, Mr. Chairman. I'm serious about this. I'm not just trying to throw a roadblock in it, but to me it's questionable whether or not we could control the conduct of people who are not our citizens dealing with one another just because there happens to be some property that involved lease up here. I'd request that I'd be given the benefit of research.
Mr. Chairman, surely a situation where they're selling oil interests, for example, in Wyoming between a Massachusetts resident from a Florida corporation, we would not have jurisdiction, but where they're selling Alaskan interests, we would be doing, we would be happy to provide that to the state.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Why would
you give the state the benefit of that, wouldn't you?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Any further if you have any questions? Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
The two people dealing with each other. We'll provide Senator John with that information.
Yeah.
Thank you. Any further testimony on Senate Bill 432? Move it on.
432?
I move the pass Senate Bill 432 from committee to the direct decisions.
Ask my consent. Any objections?
Yes.
We have a little bit of. Is anybody online now?
No, absolutely.
Okay, well, let's. What?
Yeah,
were they going to come on too?
Whatever you're ready to call.
that's the case, we could, we have 15 minutes, maybe we better close.
140.
Okay, well, we'll take up Senate Bill 464 at this particular time. I imagine we have some people here for...
Horizontal properties?
Right. The 481, which is a cemetery bill. Harry, we're gonna be just a little while, Harry, if you wouldn't mind. Thank you. Yes. This is one of those...
Is this the original?
Yes, sir.
Oh, God, there's Albert.
Albert.
See what happens when you turn a one-page bill back to the attorneys?
You're right, I'm surprised Albert came in with a one-page bill.
Come back 22 pages. Great job. Go on. Are they on? This is Labor and Commerce Committee meeting in Juneau. We're on teleconference with Anchorage site, I believe, is the only one. We have Senate Bill 464 before the committee by Senator Helfer, a bill actually revising the laws relating to horizontal property regimes and permitting an establishment of condominiums and mobile homes. Senator Helfer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I like the one-page bill a lot better, too. However, what apparently has to be done is you have to go through the entire statute and make changes to eliminate the provisions which limit condominiums to basically the same wall. That's what the second draft does. It was my intention in introducing the bill to provide another alternative for housing, which is precluded in existing Alaska law and doesn't necessarily have any reason to be precluded. It doesn't mean that condominium operation of a trailer park is gonna cure all the current problems, but it's one of the options that is available. And would give owners in a park in a condominium form of ownership an incentive to have, I think, high-quality parks. It also gives them something of value that they can be building on. In at least the initial work, it appears that the cost of buying a condominium lot as compared to continuously renting a lot of the trailer park is fairly comparable. So when they've spent a number of years in this park, they actually have some value there that they can sell when they intend to leave. I've got a number of comments here that I think some of the people would be here, but we've called a lot of people on the bill to ask what they thought about it, and I'll just pass these things out. But it's from various areas all over the state in terms of working out the concept. I think probably Dick Bradley can explain why we had to go from a 1.5-page bill to an 18 or 19-page bill, and what the legal terms mean far better than I can.
Question by the committee? Thank you, Senator. Dick Bradley?
We'd like to
push the button first. Identify yourself and what do you want to sue the bill here?
My name is Dick Bradley, attorney for legal services. With regard to the substitute for Senate Bill 464, Labor and Commerce, I have taken the original bill, which was only as short as it was because of the time constraints to 35-day filing period, and expanded it to deal with the law on the old law talked about horizontal property regimes, the new law, I have moved to condominiums because that's what everybody knows, that's the term that everybody uses. The bill does basically three things. It changes the term apartment to unit, and that's the larger percentage of the changes in the law. The second thing it does is revise rather substantially the definitions. the, there are a few other terms, a few other usages within the bill that are changed to conform to the new definitions. I took the new definitions to a very large extent from the Uniform Law Act. And the third thing that it does, in a few places the law seemed inadequate. It authorized a practice within a condominium in one place, and then in another section in the law, we dealt with the same problem and ignored the problem. And I made those sections fit together. Those are the three things that the bill does. The basic change is to move from the concept of an apartment to the concept of a unit. It deals then with a condominium and an apartment, or a condominium and an office building, a condominium arguably in a parking garage, or in a trailer park. And the other thing that would be susceptible to a condo ownership.
You say it relates to a condominium and a parking garage?
It would be possible to have a parking garage that was owned by condominium concepts, yes.
It also adopted up to besides those ones you mentioned.
Anything that you want, essentially, that is... I mean, obviously, the things that leap to mind are residential apartments and office buildings. I noticed some office buildings in Anchorage the last time I was up there, so apparently we're already using the law for that. But then anything else that it would be possible. In California, they have condominium arenas. This law would not permit it. But by adding two words, you could permit it.
Thank you. Any questions left for me? Thank you, Dick. Would you stand by for a while for any questions? Mike Lynch?
Thank you, Senator. I'm Michael Lynch, Executive Director of Alaska Housing. I just glanced at Senator Halford's comments, which he gave you that he gathered out of state, and I see I've already been quoted in there correctly. And but I thought since I was down here, I'd come anyway. The changes in the bill are what they said they are. The substitution is the word unit for apartment, and it's a change in the unit definition. However, it seems to Alaska Housing that when you read unit, what you've really done is taken the term condominium and turned it back into subdivision. What you're now doing is once again subdividing the real estate. This is not a condominium in the sense of the word. This is a PUD or a de minimis PUD, such as the best example that pops to mind is Bayshore in Anchorage, where everybody owns their own real estate and they have common maintenance of sewer and water and roads. We don't think, while the bill does create condominium mobile home parks and that's something we don't have, we don't think it really accomplishes the sponsor's goal. As I understand it, the sponsor's goal is to allow either the creation of new mobile home parks in which the land is owned by the unit owner, or to allow the subdivision of existing mobile home parks so that there'll be a vehicle for a mobile home park owner to sell his land to the existing mobile home unit owners and avoid the problem such as you're having here in Juneau now, where rather than sell the park to the unit owners, it's being sold for some other purpose and the unit owners are being thrown out. We think the proper vehicle for that would be as a PUD or a de minimis PUD, which does not require this legislation, and gets away from some of the problems that go with condominiums, such as when condominiums are financed, their pre-sale requirements are 50%. No units are financed by any lender until 50% of the units are sold. There's a concern about owner occupancy as opposed to rental units, these kind of things. So we can't argue that the bill creates a condominium mobile home park, but we don't think that it adds anything. We think that the vehicle of either doing straight subdivision or a de minimis PUD already exists and that the problems could be solved using that vehicle.
Question. Thank you. Senator Sackman?
Why isn't a PUD utilized in that unit?
I don't know, Senator. I think, frankly, because thus far the mobile home parks that have been sold, there was a desire to do something else with it. There are what could be considered to be mobile home PUDs in Anchorage already. I believe down between the old and the new Seward Highway, below Diamond, there are sections that are cut up in 20-foot lots or 30-foot lots on which there are mobile homes now. So that, in essence, is this kind of thing already.
Okay, two other things,
sir.
Okay, first of all, could you comment about the financing, how much this is going to either take away from existing programs or would have to add on in terms of capitalization? And also, could you explain what you see as a problem with the pre-sale requirement of 50%? Is that what you were talking about earlier?
Yes. Yeah. As far as the financing goes, Senator, there is no provision, at least at Alaska Housing, for financing lots for people to acquire. The only exception to that is where you have an existing trailer park that's being closed and someone wants to move his unit out of that park and wants to buy a lot someplace, such as the Valley or wherever. There's no provision in Alaska Housing for financing mobile home lots, which is what this would require. We finance units only, or units and real estate together. As far as the pre-sale, what I'm getting at is that when a condominium is done, all lenders, not just Alaska Housing, but Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, are always concerned about the character of the condominium, that it won't turn out to be a rental unit. No one wants to be financing single units in a rental project. So they require that before they buy any loans, if you wish, any paper, that 50% of the units be sold so that the character of the project can be established, that they can see that it's at least 80% owner-occupied. Therefore, if you're going to build a mobile home condominium, you would be tied to the same thing. From my experience on the East Coast, where they're doing this kind of thing, they're doing the subdivisions, and it's treated as each one is an individual house, and each one is financed, and they just go on about it. There's no 50% requirement. There's no need to accumulate a large group of sales before financing begins.
Since there are no provisions for financing at this point in time within HFC, how much would it take, how much would you estimate that would be needed to capitalize to start this up?
Senator, I don't have any idea. There are, I think the number is 20,000 mobile home lots in the state of Alaska. How many parts would be subdivided? I couldn't hazard a guess. And I really have no idea what the value of a lot is. I know that the latest numbers I've seen in Anchorage were that it costs between $15,000 and $20,000 to construct a mobile home lot, but what one would market for, I have no idea.
If I could ask one question, if the legislation were to include the AHFC, or if it would include the AHFC regulations for new built and possibly even condo conversions, there are a whole host of safeguards built into there for the safety of the public and AHFC. Would that change your assessment of this piece of legislation?
Let me back up, Nate. AHFC is not against the legislation. What we're really saying is we don't think it accomplishes the apparent goal. We think that the ability to accomplish it is already here. Basically, as near as we can tell, this is nothing more than a land sale. This is not selling housing units. This is selling lots, which are really a subdivision, but being called a condominium. And there's nothing in AHFC that even addresses that. We do not finance lot sales.
With this legislation, you would not be able to finance them either, is that correct?
The legislation does not address financing, sir.
Would not. Okay. Thank you. We'll go to Anchorage. We have Fred Ferreira.
Mr. Ferreira, would you please go ahead?
Yes, thank you. Senator, I received a copy of the bill and I studied it and discussed the matter with Robert Erickson, the president of the American Institute of Real Estate Appraisers chapter here in Alaska, and I'm representing the Society of Real Estate Appraisers, and we've reviewed the changes and so forth, and I think generally that we're in concurrence with the thought of establishing a mobile home condominium. And we realize it is a new concept in Alaska, but we do think that in light of so many of the projects that are being transferred to other uses, I think you will find that some of the projects will in fact be condominiumized and the owners or the occupants would have a chance to buy the lot they're on. Our calculations indicate that based on current space rents, which are going to be increasing again drastically this year, we believe, that in most cases they'd be able to advertise the purchase of a condominium lot at about the same level as they'd be paying for space rents. Now, that does assume that perhaps the Alaska Housing Program could be modified where they presently allow the financing of a mobile home and a vacant lot, a typical subdivided lot, I would envision perhaps that some effort would be made to modify their program so that a condominium lot would be incorporated along with the mobile home, so that it can be incorporated as a single unit and financed through them as they're financing presently other mobile homes on individually owned lots. So I think that modification is something that would be sought in the future. The fact is that we think that the process of developing a condominium mobile home park would be certainly quicker in the Anchorage area where the demand would be most active. In many cases now, if you have a parcel of R5 land, which is the zoning you would need to develop a mobile home park, you would have to go through a fairly lengthy process in order to subdivide that into a PUD development. And I would think in most cases you'd probably have substantial objection from virtually everybody that in the vicinity relative to that in an effort to stop it, even though in many cases if the zoning is correct, it probably could not be stopped. As a condominium, the effort can be accomplished in a much more rapid order. I think we would find a better quality for developed because the purchasers would be involved in the court itself and the amenities put into the court would be of a higher quality and more comprehensive than we normally are seeing in courts in Alaska. We just don't have courts up here developed as they are in the lower 48, mainly because the rate of return on these courts has been relatively low in relation to the development cost. Mr. Lynch's comments relative to the $15,000 plus range is quite correct. The current cost in the Anchorage area would be at the very least $15,000, and recent estimates we've seen have been approaching $20,000 per space for developing a very basic mobile home park with relatively few amenities. This particular bill will not alleviate the cost of construction, but it would enable someone to amortize the cost of that construction over a longer period loan, and as a result make a prospective purchaser able to purchase at the same rate he'd be paying for space rent. So we think it's very appropriate. One of our comments in that regard, though, is that perhaps the amendment hasn't gone far enough, in that it really is a concept where this bill is enabling an airspace cubicle, rather than a space within walls, to be labeled as a condominium and sold. That would be a surveyed airspace cubicle from a certain elevation and widths and distances. In the lower 48 in many states, the Horizontal Regimes Act already provides for this type of use, and it is general to the extent that condominiums can be established and are established in some areas, such as a small boat harbor, where a private developer can develop one and sell a slip as a condominium, even though there are perhaps no improvements other than the floats around it. Or perhaps in some cases now in California, the residential condominiums are including additional areas like a patio or backyard area, where rather than making a limited common area, as is typical here in Alaska, because of our Regimes Act, they actually deed title to the airspace cubicle out there, which gives the owner more rights and privileges within that airspace to landscape and make modifications of that space than he presently has. I think perhaps in the event that this bill is not modified to include things like that, at some point in the future, I think it might be worthwhile to look at it once again to include airspace cubicles in our bills. And I'm sure it will come to pass because it has come to pass in many states. We don't see any detriment to it. Mr. Lynch's comments relative to the lack of financing are probably valid. A vacant lot today in Alaska is only financeable on a short-term basis and generally to a credit union or a short-term bank loan. So unless Alaska Housing incorporated this within their mobile home program where they can finance this as if it were a vacant lot, which in fact it is, with a mobile home on the site, then of course most purchasers would be looking at either the seller financing or a 12-year loan or something along that line. So there could be some impact from that standpoint relative to how quickly they would be marketing. The comment raised relative to the absorption rate and the percentage sold before closings could occur, again, is a valid one. The only difference in the airspace situation here is that we are a very strong demand for mobile home spaces in the Anchorage area. I don't think that a pre-sale requirement, no matter what that requirement would be any detriment in Anchorage to selling a condominium mobile home space, provided, of course, the sales prices were at a reasonable level. I think the demand far exceeds the supply that anyone realizes, and it's going to accelerate in the next few years. I know several large mobile home parks that will be eliminated And there's virtually no place for those people to go at this point except moving to the Valley, who is whether enacting their own legislation relative to what happens to mobile home parks up there. I think the Bear Valley Bill, and both Mitch Erickson and myself, and I'm sure he can speak also if you like, will echo the belief that we think it is valid and should be enacted. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Fred. Could you address the planned unit development concept?
Planned unit development is an undeveloped concept. No one has developed one in Anchorage. The lots that Mr. Lynch is referring to, I think, in South Anchorage, some of them near Lake Otis Road on 68th Avenue, they are basically minimum lot size lots meeting current subdivision requirements, but they were known, to my knowledge anyway, are PUD developments. I talked to different types of developers who attempted to put together a PUD, but they found out that the cost of the land and the development and the surveying and the requirements for municipal approval, the time frame was such that they didn't feel it was an economic venture, and no one has proceeded on that basis for a mobile home PUD. The other ones are all privately owned lots and are familiar with several of them, and they are utilized that way. A PUD would be a valid thing. I just think it may be a much more limited application from the standpoint of timing.
Thank you.
A situation, too, where on a PUD, whenever it does go in for a PUD, we have a density requirement. For instance, on a mobile home park, they have some regulations in Anchorage relative to how large the spaces would have to be and so forth. I would imagine if it went to a PUD type of proposal, I think you'd probably find that the density would end up being less. Which could be an advantage, obviously, if you had more space around your mobile home. However, if you can get the price of those units up way out of line in proportion to the value of the mobile home itself, whereas the existing statutes, which would apply probably in this instance if you set up a condominium mobile home, would be based on the condominium statute of the Anchorage municipality or other boroughs, and as a result, you would probably have a density more in keeping with what would be appropriate for a mobile home park, and as a result, keep the prices down for the individuals purchasing them. We can all agree that larger is better than smaller, but if you end up pushing your lot prices in your PUD to $45,000, it doesn't make much sense to go out there and buy a $30,000 mobile home to put on it if you're half and half price. So we think that's going to be the only problem. We can probably get greater density this way, and it'd probably be more feasible for more development to occur and more people to buy the lots based on the condominium basis rather than the PUD basis, I think.
Thank you, Fred. Any questions by the committee? We'll come back to Juno, then, and Michael Cohen. You'll have to hold it down, Mike.
Sorry about that.
My name is Michael Cohen, and I'm a resident of Juneau, and I'm also a resident of one of the credit courts that are creating the problem in Juneau. I'm here today in support of this bill for a number of reasons. First, I imagine my basic reason is for density size per area. I heard testimony a short while ago that the average mobile home lot in Anchorage is possibly 15, maybe 20,000 per lot. Here in Juneau, there are no tribal subdivisions that are privately owned by the individuals who own their mobile homes. However, one is being developed.
Mr. Chairman, unless I heard wrong, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think they're saying it's 15 or 20,000 to develop a lot. That's with the utilities. It doesn't address the price of the lot.
Okay, so what I heard, it was just 15 to 20,000.
No, that's just both. The sewer and water.
Okay. Basically, what I'm saying is that there are no such developments here in Juneau yet where the mobile homeowners own those lots they sit on. In fact, this is what has created the problem in Juneau, the fact that there are none. This bill, of course, would help create or rectify that situation, a situation that Juneau City Borough Assembly, Planning Committee, Lands Committee, and a number of officials within City Borough have stated that there is a great crisis here in Juneau concerning housing, and we do need alternative housing made available that would be comparatively inexpensive and that is affordable. I believe this bill would help make it affordable. For one thing, it would, as the last fellow that testified mentioned, lower the prices of lots for these mobile homes, and that there could be a higher density for these mobile homes, in more in keeping with the mobile home park rather than privately owned larger lots in the mobile home subdivision. For this reason, I would support it. For other reasons, such as the revising the definitions, we are about to see a mobile home subdivision go in general, hopefully, very quickly, which will be privately owned for the people in Valley Forge Mobile 2 here in Juneau. When this subdivision goes in, which will be privately owned, we will definitely need a clear understanding of rules and regulations that would govern it, which this bill does do. We would definitely need authorization for certain practices, which again this bill would do. And again, we would definitely need the lowest price possible in these lots, because we in general, I'm not sure the situation in Anchorage, but we in general are facing a total loss of all equity in our mobile homes, so that when we move, we not only have the excessive burden of paying our present homes that are sitting in the dump, we're also going to have the burden of paying for these new mobile home lots. So any advantageous actions that would lower the price of those lots would be highly acceptable with me.
Thank you, Mike. Any questions by the committee? Thank you. Is there any further testimony from Anchorage? Thank you.
Thank you very much. The opportunity to be heard.
Thank you.
I
know. Senator Halford, do you want to pursue this any further? Or any particular questions?
I think it does provide another option, as I stated initially, and I think that option is the benefit of the people in Juneau. It's also the benefit of the people in Anchorage. I think we're going to see some real problems developing there that may not be really up and going yet. If the people in Juneau, for example, can get the municipalities to work with them, they could, in fact, form a condominium. Consistent with Uniform Act, and I don't think creates problems. My feeling is to try and support a concept and try and work out the details and give that to the private sector as an alternative in the housing. And the need is very obviously there.
Senator, I want just a clarification on my mind, Senator. My understanding is that because it's so strong with the concept of condominiums, it would require a 50% pre-sale, which obviously looks like there's going to be no problem in Anchorage.
Well, the pre-sale requirement, as I understand it, and I think Mike Lynch can explain this better, but as I understand it, is so that a bank knows that there's going to be sufficient commitment to that, and it's tied generally to a building, to maintain the common areas and actually run the condominium and run the association. So they require a substantial number of pre-sales before they'll finance anything, know that's going to happen. In the case of a mobile home park, that is substantially less problem because the lots are individually serviced. You're providing sewer and water hookups and this sort of thing. But if a mobile home lot is not sold, it doesn't take away from the operating cost in terms of all the other things as it would, or to the degree that it would in a building. So I think it may be legitimate as this thing takes effect to reduce the pre-sale requirement. If the pre-sale requirement isn't taken out, it will be slower to start condominium trailer parks. But I think they will still go in the areas of the highest need, even with the pre-sale requirement.
So you understand, as I understand, at this point in time, let's take a pre-sale
requirement. That's correct. I think it takes it through AHFC and through banks. Is that correct?
Is this in effect in other states?
Yes, it is.
I think I picked up words from other states, but I don't know how they use. Another question by committee? Anyone else care to testify on this bill?
Motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move
substitute for Senate Bill 464, leaving comments within the majority conditional as amendments.
Objections?
Carried.
Thank you. Senate Bill 481. Gary Horn, I'm sorry to keep you waiting. I know you seem nervous and calmer.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Harry Wimmer, and I live in Palmer, but I am, since Tuesday night, president of the Angeles Memorial Park Cemetery Association. I was formerly vice president. We asked for this legislation because it will help us in a couple of ways. As you probably know, the last statutes were copied pretty much from the Oregon statutes. They haven't always been updated, and this is one area where they need to be updated. Oregon has updated theirs twice since the copied ours from them. The two things that we're concerned about are incorporation. We talked to our lawyer, and he said that as an association, we would be liable for any suits as individuals that might come against the cemetery association. And we wanted to get that changed so that it would be an incorporation, and we could deal with it as an incorporation in case of any lawsuits against it. The other thing is in Section 5, and if you look on page 3, if you have a copy of this bill, the law formally said that we could borrow money and go to debt for laying out establishment of the grounds and avenues of the cemetery. It didn't mention building, but we need to construct a new building, and according to the way the law was written, we felt like, the lawyer felt like we weren't authorized to borrow money to be sure. So we asked the DMT. The other things in this are simply a matter of cleaning up the wording and adding the incorporation where it needs to be added. That's all I have to say. I just ask you to pass it. If there's any questions, I'll be glad to answer them.
Thank you, Harry. You mentioned the cost on our page, and we have probably the same bill in the judiciary. It looks the same. In fact, we got a little bit of Senate rate. And I believe there are some amendments which they're addressing in the judiciary, which we have probably addressed here.
I have seen a copy
on the last page.
The companion bill. House Bill
569. Will you address the amendment? I'm sure you're aware of it, yeah?
Yes. I have an objection to the amendment. Fine. It's written.
Can I ask staff to bring us up to speed on what this particular amendment does relative to what the judiciary concerns are?
This one was recommended by Consumer Protection. The judiciary amendment isn't listed in here. Judiciary's concern was that you need to tighten up the language so that the money would be just spent on upgrading sanitary concerns.
So, Ms. Chairman, do we have any language from the judiciary?
No.
No.
Just here down.
Where is it? In here? We have the clarifications. Okay, here it is. Okay. It is on page 2, line 8. Proposed amendment that is being considered in judiciary, which is supported by the Consumer Protection Division, is after the word corporation, line 8, the following words will be inserted that are related to the operation of the cemetery. In other words, it should be the grounds, buildings, and properties of the association or corporation that are related to the operations of the cemetery, which restricts the use of that money to that particular concept. You know the thing, and we discuss this in detail. Any objections? Any further questions?
Mr. Chairman, I move committee substitute for Senate Bill 481 for comments on the
as amended. Any objections?
Objections.
Thank Mr. Chairman, on the previous bill that we had for, there was a motion to put it out to individual recommendations. Could I ask that it also be sent to finance? That was going on trailer, a recommendation from this committee. Can we send it to finance?
464, do you want me to request that?
Could you please?
Part of this, yeah, I will.
I think if I look at it, Senator, you might check it, I don't see a financial surplus from 481, that's got some positions and dollars involved.
481?
That was a signature.
432, it's got some new positions and stuff like this one.
Make a note of that.
I almost raised the question.
Yeah. Yes, go ahead.
Okay. We'll ask those two to go and find out for the rest of them.
No.
Had before us, Senate Bill number 491, Labor Commerce, this is one we had before us last week, we're dealing with ways and measures. And Senator Pettyjohn, change on page 6, 12, and 14, relating to Class A, Class B fences. I think you've got a particular question there. Oh, yeah, okay, I see the relation there. Okay, do you want us to add a particular change so we can get this on its way?
Well, on page 6, the original language, allowed an employee at Commerce to arrest people for road limitations and overweight vehicles and so forth, and I felt that might have been might cause some problems to that much. People being spread at rest for driving a truck with too many crates on it. I didn't think it would be necessary for the purpose of the act, so they did delete it during page 16 and
page 6,
and on page 12, as I recall, originally this was a Class A misdemeanor.
Right.
And they changed it to Class B misdemeanor. Class A misdemeanor, you're up to a year in jail. Class B is 90 days, it just seemed to me to be a little more reasonable. They made that change.
And page 14.
Page 14,
This was a particular, as I understand, a agreement between the truckers, I believe, and Commerce relative to the, I believe the original bill said 5 or 10, was reduced to 5 cents a pound, which is agreeable to the truckers. Those were the changes we have incorporated in the community substitute. And further discussion, you don't care to add, Lisa, do you care to speak on this?
Yes.
We can move it on up, Mr. Chairman. Good. Mr. Chairman, I move community substitute for Senate Bill 491 of Commerce.
So have you done? We done with community substitute yet?
Moved it out. And I move community substitute for Senate Bill 491 Audit Committee with individual. Unanimous consent? Objections?
Period. Good language, Chris. Take me for a second.
Yeah.
That's it.
Very good.
But what happens when you have to, when you tell me about high, you have your convictions.
We'll have this. No, for a while.
Yeah, we gotta make sure we get enough money.